I'm out of practice.
How do we do this thing again?
You gotta do an intro. This is when you do an intro.
You know, I was listening to a podcast this week. My favorite new podcast. Can't remember the name of it. Front Row Seat. And the guy interviews business leaders, executives, thought leaders, people who've made a real impact in the world. And one of the guys who deals with like behavior, studying people's behavior, said that he went to a telemarketing company and he changed one line of their script to add one sentence at the beginning, and it increased their sales $10 million in the first month.
Oh.
And the line was, imagine you pick up a phone call, you don't know who's on the other line, and someone goes, oh, crap, my dog just spilled my coffee on my keyboard. Can you hold on a second? I got to clean this up. Our brain is programmed with certain responses to certain situations. And so when you cancel the script on a listener or somebody involved in a conversation, like they don't have a programmed script in their brain to respond. So now they're like, oh, okay, well, you have my attention.
Huh.
And so it threw them off their game. And so they weren't like treating the person as a telemarketer anymore. Anyway, so I feel like we need that kind of a line for starting. So just Switchcast Season 6. I'm your host, Doug Tabbitt, here with my co-host, Tyler Sanders. Ethan Huffnagel, our executive producer, and Dan Doucette, our technical advisor, is in-house tonight. We need a legal advisor in-house, too.
Now, none of this is legal advice, Doug, so we don't need anybody to advise us.
You're right, because Switchcast is a podcast where we don't know what we're talking about where we know what we're talking about despite evidence to the contrary. The automotive podcast, it's not just for car people. Coming up with some new lines, testing them out for season 7.
Ooh.
A main course of candor with a side of sarcasm.
Ooh.
All right. Candor.
Barrel of nowhere.
Or from a listener. I like this. This was in your
listener
report. Yeah, it's excellent description of our podcast. An atypical automotive show that talks about all things automotive, not just technical details on cars. More like not even technical details on cars. Feels like a fun conversation with old friends, and every episode is fun to listen to.
Aww.
I wrote that? No. You put that in our season 6 report,
yeah.
Our sponsor pitch deck. That is a listener comment.
Oh, a listener, right? Yeah.
I think we massaged that a little bit. It's a good description of the podcast. Plus, if I change it, I don't have to give them credit.
Okay. Well, you said the quiet part out loud, Doug. Let's calm down.
That's what we do with this. Oh, that's a great description. Switchcast, where we say the quiet parts out loud.
Oh, boy. We're so off the rails. This is what happens when we don't do this. Ethan, the cue cards are a little blurry. Can you fix?
Yes.
I don't know. The teleprompters are a little, they shut down. The
teleprompter.
I swear, Ethan.
You do enjoy this podcast, like our listener, feel free to write us a review like that. We might even use it. Hey, we could have a subtitle contest. There you go. Write a review of our podcast wherever you listen, and it might show up in a future episode as the description of our podcast. Might even show up in text somewhere. Also, please leave us 5-star review. Share it with your friends. We don't do promotion. We don't do advertising. So if you heard about this podcast, it's organic. And so we hope that you will do the same so that your friends can hear about it as well. That ensures that we will continue to make great quality content. Let's see. What is fueling this podcast? I'm back on the wagon.
Ooh.
I don't know if the podcast quality will improve or disprove.
I guess we did record a bit while you were abstaining.
Disprove?
Yes. Deprove?
Is that the right word?
Well, I've been saving some.
What's
some
the opposite
scotch
of M?
That's a fair question.
Reprove? I'm sorry.
Where's the restart button?
sorry. That was my fault. Talking off mic.
No, I've got some scotch that I've been wanting to kill, but Doug likes him some scotch, so I've been waiting for him to be drinking again.
Oh, that was...
Wow, this has been sealed excellent. For a minute. This is some Lagavulin Offerman Edition, which is 11 years old, and this is the charred oak cask from like 2 years ago or something like that. So
let's see if it's better than the rum cask. I like the rum cask, but it was a little sweet.
You want some?
I do, thank you.
Mike, hold on. Oh, this glass is quiet.
No, there's no glugging.
Sorry, everybody. You did not get the full experience of that. Oh,
I'm excited to drink this, though. Notes. We opened this together at a friend's house when I first got it, and we killed like half the bottle that night.
For the audio listener, this is just a bottle of Dewars that they're passing around. Ethan, right
now. My God.
Don't get it twisted.
Dan, get him out of here.
Ethan's on fire tonight.
In a pinch, Dewars is fine.
All right. Speaking of drinking,
Dewar.
Oh no, that was off mic. Thankfully, Bachman collection results. We covered these cars in advance of the auction. A lot of bright yellow and red, oddball color Ferraris. Not quite as tasteful as Michael Fuchs' custom spec cars, but. Yeah, while some things are a sight for sore eyes, these were a sight to make eyes sore, I think, if you look too much at them without sunglasses. Anyway, as we kind of expected, they went for crazy money. They all went for crazy money. They set records upon records. They smashed records. Ferrari Enzo sold for $17 million, right? Ugh. Dan, am I right? There's one that sold for 17, one that sold for 11, which was still double of the high watermark.
The green Challenge Stradale went for bananas
over $1 million.
Money.
Dollars. I think I called that. A F40 sold for $6.6 million, the most expensive non-LM F40 ever sold. Oh, S50 sold for $12 million, including fees, which is really frustrating for me.
The hockey stick of the F50 is well, but I mean, even otherwise, what's a non-outlier been selling for, like mid, like $5-6 million?
Five more? Is now the low mark.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, a year and a half ago, $5 million was kind of like, okay, that'll get you a great example. And then they went up quickly. There was an $8 million sale last year, okay. And now 12. So
do we think that this was just a result of a bunch of people with ungodly gobs of money in the same room at the same time drinking inevitably free martinis and gin and tonics?
I don't know.
Like, there's no way
that
this is real.
One buyer, it is real.
Well, like, obviously the money transacted, but...
One buyer bought $70 million worth of Bachman's cars.
That's
what I'm saying. He bought all of the big dollar cars. And that one buyer is a Canadian collector / investor who is the financial backer of Cario Motor Cars, who is, we've said it before, arguably one of the, well... They have probably the worst public reputation of any high-end dealer in America, maybe in the world. So, but they have all these crazy cars on their showroom, and everyone knew, okay, it's this one backer. They're not actually buying the cars. They have this collector who's trading cars through there and putting his cars on the showroom floor, and he bought $70 million worth of these cars.
But
they're still real transactions. I mean, it happened.
They are real. That's not when I say it's not real. It's like kind of some fantasy land where it's just like there was a bunch of billionaires in the crowd. And to them, like, that's not a ton of money. Whereas maybe they wouldn't have been in the room or wouldn't have driven up for like a normal ish Enzo, I guess.
Right. Let's see. I think they are they are on their website now. I've been told they were. Let's see if they're actually up there. But yeah, they are. I guess listed for sale again, but I don't know.
It's just weird. But that just felt like an auction where somebody with unbelievable amounts of money was going to go and pay whatever it took to get these specific cars because of how storied they were, because of what they represent. Yeah, the crazy specs, like I've got this one of, you know, all that crap.
They are not on their website, so I'm wrong there. But maybe they actually were for the guy's private collection. But either way, yeah, $70 million went to one guy.
And all that money to buy these cars that you won't drive because they're all like practically almost delivery mile cars.
You have that many cars, you can't drive them anyway.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. The other standout example, and most of the rest of the transactions were business as usual. It wasn't like the entire market spiked. It was Ferraris led by this Bachmann collection and some collectible Porsches. But there was a paint to sample. Was it a pure orange, Dan? Porsche 918 Weissach package. Yes. RS orange. And, well, no, it couldn't be.
Yeah, because
it would have to be pastel orange or pure orange, because RS orange was discontinued in 2011 because it didn't meet their paint longevity testing.
Pure orange is what the auction page says.
The build sheet says RS orange. Okay, well, that's an interesting debate. But anyway,
Dan and I are going to fight.
It's one of three, and it sold for $6 million, which is about double what I'm aware of as the previous high watermark for 918. But of course, it was described as one of one because it was one of three in pure orange, but one of one that had certain CXX interior stitching. So in order to sell a $6 million car and validate themselves, they had to go to take a page from the Corvette book of rare spec flexing, I call it.
That's They've got the orange term. Piping, Doug. The orange piping.
The orange piping makes it one of one. There's a $3 million premium. If only Corvette guys could get that kind of premium for their 2LT with red calipers. let's see. We've got a submission from Michael Martin via switchcast.live. This is another car up for sale on GovDeals, a liquidity services marketplace. 2020 Porsche 911 Carrera S Coupe. Bid to $71,000. Closes in a couple days. And it has 26,000 miles. It has a rebuilt title for flood damage.
Ooh.
But, of course, their description is 2020 Porsche 911 Coupe two-door, mint condition!
Ah.
Three exclamation points, maybe four. Anyway, looks like it was a Hurricane Helene casualty based on the information I found. After it was rebuilt, it was financed with Westlake Financial, which is the stereotypical high-end subprime lender. Like, you have to have such bad credit that you can't afford to pay attention. It also seems like the buyer was underwater as well, as it got repossessed in 2025. Okay, it was actually a drug repo, but the joke doesn't work for, you know, a drug repo. But yeah, it's described as mint condition. But if you pull up the Epic VIN report, which if you want to pull up your own report on cars and get photos of past sales and like salvage auction sales and stuff like that, you can use our affiliate link in the show notes, the description. But anyway, the photos from the salvage auction on this car show the water line at the door handle.
Yeah.
Which is not...
I'm reading through the comments because
there's a lot of water.
There's like the question and answer thing on GovDeals.
Oh,
and
there
the amount
is?
Of, yeah, if you scroll down on the page, there's like people posting questions. So many are like, hey, why do you say it's mint condition? Because it was in a flood. And it gets to one point where the seller is like, hi, good morning. Yes, the vehicle's a rebuilt title. That's why it's 40K less from the market value. Thanks. It's in so many people are giving them crap.
Oh, yeah. Your price is on the high side for flood vehicle. Well, it's an auction. It's not their price. That's what somebody's willing to pay. Oh, my gosh.
I'm aware the vehicle is flood damage. That is the reason for the pricing.
Open comments.
This is a 110 to 120K car. Vehicle has a true 360 inspection. It is in perfect running condition.
It was sold by a dealer that specializes in salvage cars. So that's all they do is buy them and rebuild them. So anyway, in other news, De Tomaso still hasn't delivered a P72. There seems to be an article every year that says this is the year. There hasn't been an article yet, but they have completed 4 prototypes. I think last time we brought this up, they had completed 1. And supposedly the next chassis number will be the first customer delivery, which is DT005. So that was on their website as of November of 2025 was their last press release. Man, talk about hindsight, I guess. If I had bought Carvana stock, we could have bought Di Tommaso.
Like if we like put, the company, not just a car,
the company, whoa, okay. The company, if we had put like 50 grand into Carvana, when we said Carvana's bankrupt, we have $4 a share. We could have bought Di Tommaso when we were saying Di Tommaso was bankrupt and just owned the whole company. But I don't want them to fail. I want Carvana to fail because I think that it's all shady fudge numbers. I don't want Di Tommaso to fail. I want them to make what I believe is the most beautiful modern hypercar out there. I did not just use the term hypercar.
You did.
Supercar. I'm sorry.
Doug, you are the weakest link. Goodbye.
But they still haven't delivered a car. Will 2026 be the year? We should take bets. Our Patreon topic for those patrons who are with us, thank you very much. We do give you special exclusive content. If you're not with us yet, go to patreon.com/switchcast. It is incredibly inexpensive to sign up. Our topic is, if reliability wasn't a concern, what cars would you own? So we'll be, fully lubricated by that time. And with what's fueling this podcast, well, our tanks will be full. I don't know. You might have thought it would never happen, but Switchcast is endorsing a transport company. Whether you're moving a rare collectible, a high-end sports car, or your personal luxury vehicle, Shaughnessy Overland Express delivers with precision, privacy, and respect. This isn't just transport, it's white glove care from pickup to delivery. For over 14 years, they've earned the trust of collectors, enthusiasts, dealers, and owners by offering unmatched service and personalized attention. You'll work directly with their experienced in-house team, ensuring a smooth and private experience without middlemen or surprises. Every shipment is protected with up to $3 million in cargo insurance, offering peace of mind for even the most valuable and rare vehicles on the road. In addition to their enclosed fleet, they've also established a trusted auto transport brokerage service, giving you access to a nationwide network of vetted open and enclosed carriers. Whether you need transport on a route they don't currently operate or their carriers are at full capacity when your schedule demands, they'll still get it done without compromising the Shaughnessy standard of excellence. Same professionalism, same personal touch, expanded flexibility. We are proud at Switchcast to endorse Shaughnessy Overland Express as the official transporter of Switchcast. Visit soexinc.com and tell them Switchcast sent you. In today's news, PR disasters for automotive auctions, the big one being Bring a Trailer in the AI Cadillac. That's right. A couple weeks ago, a Cadillac DeVille made it through the Bring a Trailer auction approval process and actually went live with mostly AI doctored photos. The car was a real car. They had a VIN number, the plate number that was shown on the car in some of the photos, not the ones that had the European plate on it, matched the VIN number. It all checked out. The mileage matched, the location matched. Like, somebody was selling a real car, but they used AI to fix their photos. And in doing so, it created many, many different iterations of a Cadillac DeVille with some very odd anomalies, and somehow the approval team did not catch it. This car actually went live, and boy, oh boy, did it de-escalate very quickly.
It escalated. You said it
went downhill.
Oh, I got you. Okay.
Yeah. Okay. It escalated quickly. Sorry.
Okay. More scotch.
More scotch. I've only had two sips. I have to imagine Creed Bratton was in quality assurance that day, because this is similar to The Office where they get the obscene watermark on the paper. It is that level of PR disaster. And I mean, it went incredibly viral. All the podcasts were talking about it. Reddit, all the forums still a thing, social media. It was not a good look for Bring a Trailer. And just to prepare for this podcast, we do actual research to see how big of an overlook this was. I tested this out with my 9-year-old and my wife, who's not a car person. And I pulled up the Bring a Trailer listing. And I did not make it past the first photo. And I didn't give them any hints. I just like, what do you see? Within 5 seconds, my 9-year-old said, that's totally AI.
There is a softness to this that I can only, my eyeballs can't describe it other than a softness, a lack of contrast.
There's a lot of softness in Cadillac DeVilles.
Well, it's more than that. The front plate is also a little screwy, but there's a softness to it that just doesn't feel right, and it's like an uncanny valley to my eyeballs.
Mm-hmm.
But I did have
also
to look.
About 4 feet longer than a real DeVille like, in some stretch. Of the photos.
Well, and I had to look through a bunch of photos because at first I didn't really know what was up. I was like, did somebody use an Instagram filter for their BAT photos? Like, what's going on? This is weird. And then you get to some of the stuff that I'm sure you've heard about at this point, the cobblestone floor mats. And
right. So I felt it was like you look at one side of the car and the other, and it was, again, back to The Office. It was corporate needs to find yeah. the difference between these two pictures. But they were glaring. It was crazy. Like, different taillights. One of the photos had a European plate. One side of the car, the passenger side, was 4 feet shorter than the driver's side. There was three different sets of wheels on the car based on which picture you looked at. And then literally, if you looked at four different photos in a row, there was three different antennas on the rear end, different taillights, some of them flush with the body, others the older style. I mean, it was like literally they were pulling from two different generations of DeVille. But some of the worst ones were, like you said, it took the cobblestone driveway and it would put it in place of the floor mats in some of the photos and in place of the radiator in another photo. So you're just like looking down at the engine bay and seeing the ground
floor
right through it. I mean, it's possible the car didn't have a radiator, but
these cobblestone mats are pretty stylish though.
It is a North Star V8. So maybe they just didn't need the radiator. They were just head guess. It's already screwed. What does it matter? But the lynch mob came out in force. And I think that's what we want to talk about. And we won't just talk about this Bring a Trailer one. There's a couple other instances with different auctions throughout the year that we've touched on. But it was unbelievable the extremities at which people were reaching to call for, you know, firing of the person who approved it, mm-hmm. and, you know, apologies from Bring a Trailer. How do we trust you in the future? All this different stuff. And, you know, one of the craziest comments that was probably the most severe.
Turns out the internet kind of goes a little crazy sometimes.
Right.
It's like being on Reddit.
Sorry, Bring a Trailer. I had to flag your comment as not constructive. Obtaining additional images of this car is not a fix for this tomfoolery. You are absolutely getting ripped on X. At minimum, the listing should be nuked and the seller should be banned. I think I agree with that. The production specialist should also be terminated. These are real dollars exchanging hands over real assets on this site. I don't know what else to tell you other than this is your reputation at stake over 99 Cadillac DeVille. Now, he has a point there, because the real crime of all of this was that Bring a Trailer accepted a 99 Cadillac DeVille with 81,000 miles.
I just thought that was a used car.
That is just a used car. It's a North Star V8 Cadillac DeVille in old man tan. Like, what is that, an $8,000 car on a good day?
We'll never know. They pulled the listing. Golly.
That's the real crime. I mean, this is like the old days of Car Bros, when they snuck the kit car Enzo into Quail, a hoity-toity judged invite-only event, and they submitted pictures and applied as a Ferrari Enzo. And it's probably one of the worst kit cars ever, and they got this into this show. It's not as bad as that, but it became a way worse PR disaster. But let's talk about, okay, is the lynch mob right? Should people be fired? Should we come out with pitchforks? Should we burn down the house?
For one thing, the real money exchanging, okay, the money doesn't go through Bring a Trailer. I think they might have an option now to like handle the transaction, so maybe that's a little bit of a caveat, but like, a little weird. But like, why doesn't everybody just take a chill pill? Like, why is everybody so upset about this? Somebody made a mistake. Bring a Trailer, like, did the right thing and pulled the auction. They, like, didn't let anybody actually try to exchange money. They probably have some procedures they need to implement or adjust or whatever in the ever-changing world of AI image and video generation nowadays. Like, hey, this was a learning experience, and we can move on. Like, I don't understand why everybody needs to be fired. Like, I know Bring a Trailer commenters don't know how the world works, but they really showed it in this like comment thread. It's insane.
Yeah. It's a mistake one could make, especially if they have a certain amount of time or a quota for how many approvals they need to get done a day. There's 200 photos and they're not looking closely at all of them. I also think of it kind of like, you know, when I saw the photos, I went, this looks like AI, but I didn't see anything glaring at first, and I had to look at the comments to find the specifics, because it's like reading words that are misspelled. Your brain can read an entire sentence of words that are misspelled because it fills in the gaps, and so your brain tells you things that are supposed to be there based on its understanding of what is supposed to be right. So it's very possible, like when you look at kit cars, you can go, well, that seems off, but you can't identify any specific things in the moment, because you go, well, it's supposed to be a Lamborghini, and then later on you go, oh no, it was an automatic. Yeah, obviously
the proportions are weird or something, those taillights aren't right.
Yeah, you question it, but you can't find specifics. So anyway, calling for one person to be fired over this is a little bit crazy, especially probably a lower level employee who is just going through reviewing these photos and miss something. Like, people freaking make mistakes. We had an employee, we've had two employees bump a car into, you know, the garage door at our shop over the years. Why would we fire them? I've done worse myself. Like, granted, it's not a PR disaster, but like, those things just happen. People are flawed and human, and it's not like there was malice. It was a mistake. And it's easily fixable. Literally no money changed hands, contrary to what this guy said. And I think the big thing with people's ire was that BAT didn't have a response ready within like 30 minutes.
And which, again, that's not how the world works.
Well, and that was the same thing we ran into with the Cars and Bids accidental bid, where a guy bid like $8,000 more than market value on a car. And we covered this earlier in the year, and it became a much, much smaller PR disaster for Cars and Bids, pales in comparison to this one. You know, what Cars and Bids finally admitted was, we should have handled it quicker. Their outcome wouldn't have been any different. They said, we stand behind the actions we took and the final decision we make, but we dragged our feet a little bit, and that gave people time to just make assumptions, come up with, you know, just be angry. And of course, misery loves company, and people love to commiserate and just, you know, stir the pot and stuff. And I think that's what happened here with Bring a Trailer. I don't even think it was like 2 days in this case, but...
Well, and Bring a Trailer is an organization that has people in it for handling these types of situations. They need to do their own analysis before they speak out of turn or speak incorrectly or, you know, rule in favor of the angry mob when actually nothing was actually wrong. In this case, obviously something was wrong, so they did the right thing. I think the insane reactionary attitude and need for immediate gratification or follow-up is just something that is pervasive everywhere. I was watching the Linus Tech Tips YouTube channel that I watch a lot. They occasionally do like meet the personalities, the talent, you know, whatever, and kind of talk through, just ask me anythings essentially. And one of the things that this person I was watching said is that as they came into the job, they loved connecting with the audience, but then they learned that they can't just say things because people take things out of context. They get angry about things that are really just benign and don't mean anything. They form that parasocial relationship. Like, nobody's forming a parasocial relationship with Bring a Trailer, but it's the same kind of like people act with limited information as if it's everything that could be known. Mm. And they get very angry, or they get very excited, or they like their emotions run wild when you really just need to be like, wow, they're probably, that's going to suck for somebody today. They're probably going to fix it though and go on with your life.
Man, mic drop right there.
It's like going on Reddit. Like, nobody knows how anything works on Reddit, but they're all get so angry about it.
I think part of the concern was people projected their larger concerns over AI onto this auction, going, well, I want to trust Bring a Trailer. I thought this was only the best cars, which it's not. It's a large marketplace of cars. BAT doesn't vet stuff and make sure that the car, they don't check cars out mechanically. Like, that's kind of why you have a 7-day auction, a comment section and stuff like that, because the buyer's ultimately responsible for doing that. But people want to believe that they can trust BAT. And so this was one of those kind of like first,
it was the crack.
It was the crack in the glass, yeah, where they go, oh no, AI can get past a human and potentially fool somebody into doing a transaction. And so I think that was maybe the bigger underlying concern that nobody, maybe people vocalized that, but you know, maybe people didn't even realize that was what they were feeling. But it's certainly a very, very big concern.
Well, and that's a very real feeling for us all. I will say, I just looked at the listing, and apparently Bring a Trailer addressed this pretty in depth on a podcast, and everybody who has decided to come back and comment on the listing was pretty enthusiastic about their response. So I guess Bring a Trailer was transparent and open, and as I think I would expect.
There's nothing to not be transparent.
I know.
It's
wild.
Such a harmless thing to happen relative to the blowback that they got. You know, it was entertaining. If anything, it was super entertaining for some of us.
And I love that it was on just a used car. This wasn't like it was something that could have gone for like millions of dollars and like really been a some sort of like crazy scheme. Like, this was just a Cadillac DeVille.
Like we said, that's a real crime. How did that get approved in the first place? All right. Let's touch briefly on another PR disaster, just because it lends context. And this one was for a dealership close to our heart, Switch Cars. Similar themes running through this. So a car had a 996, of all things, had an engine failure shortly after sale. And it was one that was highly maintained. All the service records were out there. Video was out there. You know, it was as much information as one could hope for in buying a car. And all the preventive maintenance items that might fail on these cars were, you know, preemptively addressed or inspected or whatever along the lines. So the buyer chose, I'm not going to say rightly or wrongly, they just chose to post about it on forums, basically asking for advice at the same time that they had contacted Switch Cars about this. And the lynch mob that came out, and there's a lot of very like good responses as well, like, hey, you bought a car as is, or, oh, that's a common failure for those cars, or like, you know,
there was a lot of wow,
all
this
of
sucks.
The information, but there was people that were making the most wild accusations. And again, the lynch mob going, we literally only have this little tiny bit of information, and making wild assumptions, to the point where there was people saying that the dealer should be criminally charged because it was theft by conversion. They had purposefully misrepresented or withheld information that was like damaging to the car. And so that was stealing from the buyer. And I was like, okay, that's a new take.
It's
to the point that one person said, and they were dissecting the cold start video as well, which ironically they didn't do beforehand, but afterwards they're like, oh my gosh, you can hear that noise. They knew it was going to fail. And one person posted to the effect of, because they posted that video, which they said, like, quote unquote, which everybody has seen, that proves that they knew that there was an issue with the motor because of that noise that is audible in the video and tried to cover it up.
Tried to cover it up by posting the video?
Which they admitted that everybody had seen.
Ah, it's not a good cover-up.
By posting a video publicly, which everybody has now seen, in their words, that proves that it was a elaborate cover-up. I was just like, I'm sorry.
The mental gymnastics that you have to do. Like, I don't.
So, ugh. Yeah. Cars and bids, Pete, switch cars, bring a trailer. There's a lynch mob everywhere. People making assumptions. People just want to be vindicated and just spew ridiculous things online. It always happens. Obviously, in some cases, there is mistakes made. There's wrong done. You know, we look at the Mecum PR disaster from last year where the guy hammered the car sold.
Yeah.
And, you know, but then he kept taking bids after he dropped the hammer and said sold. And that guy, you know, still is blowing that up. So in that case, probably they deserve that PR disaster because that was, in my opinion, a very clear, like, this isn't right. Anyway, but I don't know what the takeaway there is other than people need to just wait a little bit by forming opinions and posting online.
Well, and I think it's also we are in a place as a society where we don't give ourselves the time to consider any sort of nuance in the situation.
Oh, and nuance is dead.
It's
completely
all
dead.
You know, one positive or negative. That's all you can feel, and that's all you get really ramped up. And it's like, there is a nuance to every situation.
We're also in an era where everybody, and this has been said about me, right? Oh, just because you have a mic, you think your opinion's valid. Yes, somebody put a mic in front of me and I'm talking to air. But we all have a platform. We all have this social media microphone. And so we think that whatever we have to say is somehow, you know, equally as valid as somebody else. And it's not. It's just not. So, yeah.
Which is why we don't take ourselves too seriously. We're just here to have a good time, and we're glad right. that you are here with us.
Yeah. And the size of our audience doesn't mean that our opinion is equally as valid either. Look at friggin' actors who wax eloquent on politics. They got a huge audience. What do they know about politics? Or why are we trusting them on that? Okay.
Maybe anyway. They know a lot, but maybe they don't. It's just like nobody ever thinks of that. It's just you have an audience.
Right. Shrewd negotiator. This is from Mr. Wood on Instagram. Speaking of kit cars, we had a Lamborghini Aventador replica on a Pontiac GTO chassis. This was on Worst Spec, the Instagram page. Appropriate response. It is uglier than an AI Cadillac DeVille.
What is this fake engine? What are these tubes?
Yeah. We're already off to a bad start when somebody puts a mid-engine kit car on a front-engine car. That's never good. I'll give the Pontiac Mira a pass there, though. That was actually really good. And GM made that kit car. Anyway.
The first
fake
comment.
Engine. There's a fake engine in a fake engine bay. You have a real engine up front, and you have this fakey fake thing behind the seats. It's trying to look like an engine. It takes posing to a whole new level.
I think it should be
called the Lamborghini Inventador.
Ooh, oh, okay. All right. The fake engine is a bunch of cool blue coolant lines connected to what looks to be like a odd rubber floaty that goes into a pool or something that like kind of looks like it. Maybe it's a real engine cover, but I don't think it is.
It's a pool of despair.
There's air filters that are in the firewall for some reason, because that's where they would be. But I love the first comment that came up for me on Instagram, which is the craziest part is someone looked at this and told themselves they did a great job.
Which is... There's air filters poking out from the firewall surrounding a speaker also in the firewall.
Oh, my God. They put a Ventador on the door.
It's more like an Aventador.
Oh, gosh.
I have seen a lot of ads, especially for kit cars, that say this car turns heads everywhere it goes. Well, that would definitely be true here, but so does a car crash. And sometimes a car doesn't need to crash to be a wreck.
The Sheffield brand was recently revived by Jake Turkbus, an owner of an original Sheffield all-sport diver he received from his parents in 1970 when he was just 11, beginning his love of watches. As an adult, Jay used his extensive expertise in product development and marketing to revive the brand that started it all. He set out to develop watches with a high level of quality and specification at a value price. His first effort, and a successful one on July of 2023, was the debut of the Sheffield All Sport Diver 1. It had the kind of build and movement that much more expensive watches use, and his debut price of $108 was equivalent to the $13 his parents paid in 1970. Since that debut, Sheffield has expanded to a wider range of automatics and chronos, many designed around vintage Sheffield dials of the 60s. The Sheffield well of clever and unique design remains his inspiration, as well as maintaining the goal of high quality, very affordable range of automatic and quartz watches. Sheffield watches, value on merit, not just price. I love mine, so get yours at sheffieldwatches.com and be sure to mention you found them on Switchcast.
There's another dealer that's been charged with a crime, but this is not like the ones we've covered in the past. This one I'm not so sure about. In the past, it's mostly been smaller market dealers or independent dealers who were, you know, money laundering or, being really bad at money laundering. They were not paying consigners for vehicles and not delivering titles and eventually ran out of money and got caught up with by the feds. In this scenario, though, it's a major new vehicle franchise and group in Minnesota, and they've been charged in a scheme to evade Minnesota taxes. So they and one of their employees have been charged with a felony count of motor vehicle tax evasion for using a Montana LLC. Now, obviously, all of you are aware of the Whistle and Diesel issue, but he's just a guy. This is a major dealer group. So what in the world happened, and what is their opinion on this? Again, I'm not going to give you my legal opinion, but being in the car business and having used Montana LLCs and knowing people who have used them and, you know, kind of studying this topic, I have a different take on it than the media and probably than the... authorities who have charged them in this case. So, mncrime.com. Yes, Tyler.
Winston Diesel has been arrested a second time, it looks like, for his whole thing. Whew, there might be something here, but that's another thing.
Okay, right. So I have... The last video I made about this was Montana LLCs are not a good idea and not worth the risk. And I got a lot of flack about that. When we talked about Winston Diesel, I said, seems pretty clear-cut, they're probably going to charge him. Convict him, because they would be morons if they went after somebody that's that high profile without knowing that they had an open and shut case. Absolute morons, because it would completely backfire for them if he wins, because he's going to push it all over the internet and people go, oh, see, look at that. He won against the state. We can all do Montana LLCs. However, I have a different take on this one. Okay. MNCrime.com, Walser Automotive charged in Minnesota vehicle tax evasion case. Prosecutors allege the company and the broker, William Ward, participated in a scheme that resulted in more than $350,000 in estimated unpaid motor vehicle tax payments between March 2020 and August 23. Walser Automotive Group is a parent company of several new car dealerships across that area, and it also owns Walser Pre-Owned Sales, which is a licensed used motor vehicle dealer. Investigators claim that the structure of these businesses was used to move new vehicles through Montana LLCs in order to bypass Minnesota tax and dealer licensing requirements. They have dealer licensing. They have a new car dealer and a used car dealer. You're wrong. That's not why they did it. Now, maybe tax. We'll talk about that. Prosecutors allege the operation relied heavily on William Ward of Orono. That guy's been around forever. He's a friend of mine, you know, legit in the business. He's an experienced automotive broker, as the article says, and he worked under contract with Walser, according to the documents, since 2017. So Ward is charged individually with felony motor vehicle tax evasion and misdemeanor count of brokering motor vehicles without a license, because court records show that he did not hold a Minnesota motor vehicle dealer or broker license during this period. Well, no kidding. He worked for a dealer.
Yeah. So you don't need one if you worked for do you need a license to be a broker?
Well, it depends on the state.
Can't a guy just do that?
It depends on the state. Ohio does not allow you to broker vehicles, so they don't issue a broker license.
Oh.
So that's a whole different thing. We're not going to get into that tonight.
Ugh.
But, okay, so the long and short of it is, Ward would locate, I got to call him Billy because that's what we all call him. He would find cars at other new car dealers, buy them for resale. People have been doing it forever. That's what flippers do. Well, the reason he would put them in a Montana LLC is not to evade or avoid sales tax. I can tell you that right now. Yes, Montana doesn't have sales tax, but he didn't need to avoid sales tax because he's working for a new motor vehicle dealer who can buy cars tax exempt from other new motor vehicle dealers. So this whole thing that, oh, this was a scheme to defraud the state of sales tax is crap. They are licensed with sales tax exemption. Okay. The reason he would do that is because of motor vehicle franchise new vehicle franchise agreements with the manufacturers, not laws, agreements, right? So the manufacturers regulate heavily where the franchises can sell cars. They can't sell cars into other dealers' territories. They can't sell cars to known exporters. They can't sell cars to other dealers because they want them to sell vehicles that are not to be sold again for resale. They want to prevent flipping. However, they're terrible at it because people use things like Montana LLCs to title and register the vehicles as if they are an end user, actual retail customer, but without having to pay the sales tax. So you could say, okay, well, it's sort of a scheme, but it's really just a scheme to be able to buy these cars because these dealers are not going to sell them to Walser pre-owned or Walser new vehicle dealer. So the sales tax would not get paid no matter what. So the fact that they say, well, we've been defrauded of $350,000 in sales tax, is like, no, that they were buying them with the intent of resale. They had a vehicle dealer license that they could have bought them with, but just because of the stupid franchise agreements, which by the way, arguably can be said to violate federal antitrust laws, but that's, again, a different topic for a different night.
Who started this investigation, this thing, this case?
It started in Illinois because Illinois is policing dealers who sell to Montana LLCs. So Illinois is going, well, who are these Montana LLCs? We don't like that because we want Illinois sales tax. And then they found that the Montana LLC was Walser Investments and Billy was on a bunch of these documents for the purchases. So... Right.
So what I don't like, and you're on a tear, so you're going to continue here in a second, and I'm very excited to hear what you have to say, but take a drink. What I don't like, and we have talked about this before, is assuming any of this is true, is factual, and it seems legit based on what you've said, this article and the other one have already painted the picture of guilt, and there will be no article or journalistic follow-up on this so that anybody who reads this and gets an opinion, I don't think anybody listening to this pod, maybe somebody listening to this podcast was going to go buy a vehicle from Walser Automotive Group and is now thinking, ooh, those guys are shady. Maybe not, but they're not actually. So like, this is just really poorly done investigation by some group that doesn't know anything. And now it's like purported as like, this is what's actually happened. And tax evasion is like an intense thing.
This is a very detailed article. I will give him that. There are some other articles. This is like all the facts.
But it's like facts. It's like it's an interpretation of.
Okay, it's from the prosecution side. We'll give them that. The dealer has not given more than a cursory response because they're not going to. I think the dealer is going to win this based on my very limited knowledge of legal procedure and stuff like that. I think the dealer is totally going to get this either settled or just, you know, they're going to defeat it. But, stuff in here is like, investigators said that Walser pre-owned sold new vehicles without holding a new motor vehicle dealer license because these vehicles, Minnesota defines a used vehicle as one that is actually like used, but the odometer readings were the same. It's like, so what? Some collectors buy a new car and sit on them for a year and don't drive them. Like, who are you to say that because you drove it 5 miles instead of four, that's used and that's new? Like, titled. Titled is the technical definition of this is a used car. I titled it. Doesn't matter if I drove it or not. It is titled.
Yeah, there was.
And they don't need to have to sell new vehicles without holding a new motor vehicle dealer license because they do hold a new motor vehicle dealer license. Like, the prosecution is trying to separate and go, oh, well, you got a used vehicle dealer over here that's illegally selling new motor vehicle dealers. Then you got this broker over here that's selling without a license. But it's like, well, the used vehicle dealer is owned by the new vehicle dealer, so they don't need to do this other than to get around the dang franchise agreements. That's it. That's it, because they couldn't buy the cars. Here's my other point. The $350,000 that Minnesota claims they've been defrauded of is cars that like physically went through Minnesota and likely were sold to Minnesota residents. Guess what happens when the dealer sells them to Minnesota residents?
The resident should have to pay sales tax.
Right. The dealer collects and then remits sales tax.
Yeah.
So if they did it twice, like Minnesota would be getting essentially double taxation. They're claiming that the dealer should pay tax on something that's bought for the purposes of resale. And they're saying, well, that shouldn't be for the purposes of resale because...
This feels like when Reddit does investigation. It's a bunch of 15-year-olds that think they're real smart. It's
right.
Like, you're like, you're so close.
Right. Yeah. And the investigation claims that that statements that the dealer made about the fact that they were not doing this scheme in order to evade sales tax, that, internal statements contradicted. I'm like, well, the investigators are contradicting themselves because they're basically taking this whatever they want. Well, the intent or this vehicle isn't used and you can't sell a new car as used with a used dealer license. Well, but you have a new vehicle dealer license. So it like just these things don't matter. Like, yes, they did not pay sales tax on a car that they purchased, but they didn't need to. The only reason they set up this LLC, the intent of it, was to be able to buy cars that they couldn't otherwise. And in buying those cars, see, this is where Minnesota is like biting the hand that feeds them. 100%. This government does this all the time. In buying those cars that were not allocated to the dealer originally, they increase their sales. They increase their revenue. They increase the number of vehicles they sold within Minnesota state lines. They increase the amount of sales tax that they collected for the state of Minnesota. They increase the payroll taxes, the income taxes that they were paying to Minnesota. Minnesota made more money than they would have otherwise based on this dealer doing this scheme. Yet Minnesota is trying to put people in jail because they claim they were defrauded of $350,000 in sales tax, which wasn't theirs to begin with because they have a freaking dealer license that entitles them to buy and sell cars tax exempt. That said, this is why I tell people not to use Montana LLCs because they will eventually come for you. I don't care if it's legal. right? People can say, I'm making the argument that what they did was totally probably legal.
Not legal
but
advice.
But it's not worth it. It's not, I mean, maybe it's worth it for them for how many cars they sold, but for the average collector or person, it is not worth it to potentially have this happen to you.
What this feels like is it feels like somebody sniffed Montana LLC and then went on a tear. And like this is just caught up in the windstorm. And then they put things into Microsoft Excel and they saw a 6-digit number and got like, oh, I got something, without actually like critically thinking through the process of what might actually be happening here and that there wasn't actually any money lost. But Excel told them. It's just I don't.
Government is king of theoretical income. They're great at that. I'm just going to leave that right there. Anyway, I'm not saying this was smart on their part. Probably wasn't. I just don't think it was illegal. I think the government's barking up the wrong tree on this one. I still think you should not use Montana LLCs because the juice isn't worth the squeeze for 98% of the time. That's not legal advice. That's just friendly person advice.
Oh, Switchcast, home of friendly person advice.
Plate to sample. Plate to sample, brought to us literally in origin of the idea and also supported financially on an ongoing basis by Solon Spine. If you are crooked, they'll straighten you out. And I'm not talking about Montana LLC tax evasion scheme crooked. I'm talking about your back. If you got aches and pains, you're thinking about surgery, but you want to avoid surgery, not evade surgery. I guess you could evade surgery too, but go see Dr. Hoover at Solon Spine. That's solonspine.com. The name of the game, it's plate to sample, and we read off a vanity plate, and the other person has to try to guess what car it's on. How well do we know stereotypes? First one for you, Tyler.
Ooh, let's go. Oh, I'm just going to be so rusty.
Oh, my gosh.
Probably like
yes.
The cars you're about
to
send
me. Trying to figure out who sent us this one. It is... I almost told you what the car was. Is trying to
Ooh,
describe
keep
it.
Keep going.
This
no,
is
no,
from
you're
Jack
good, you're good.
On Instagram. The plate is road soda.
Road soda?
Mm-hmm.
What does... road pop? Is that implying that this person drinks and drives? This is a rusty Dodge Durango.
Oh my gosh, you are so close. That's the closest anybody has ever been on a random plate that gives no clue to the type of car. It is a rusty early 90s Jeep Cherokee.
Oh, that is.
Yes.
Whew, I'm good. I don't need to do any other plates.
I swear it looks like it reminds me of the car that the undercover FBI agent drove, the female one in Dumb and Dumber at the gas station, you know, when not Lloyd, the other guy is talking to her. Yeah, it looks like that Jeep.
Oh, okay. Amazing.
You're up.
First one for you, Doug, from Nathan K. Habibi with a 4 and 2 1s. I'll give you a couple of hints.
Honda Accord.
No.
I'm close, though.
It
is a gold mid-level, like, economy sedan.
That part is wrong, although I think you might be.
Darn it. Silver?
No. Okay. Not the color. The color wasn't the only wrong part. This has a carbon fiber plate wrap. And what looks to be like
an aftermarket. Well, it's got to be a BMW then.
Yes. It is a debadged BMW 3 Series. I think it's a 3 Series. With like an aftermarket carbon fiber lip on the trunk, a carbon fiber license plate. And it looks to
His
be a Maxwell House coffee.
His dad is really upset at him for wasting money on such a frivolous car. Because his dad drives that silver Honda Accord.
But.
And he negotiated the heck out of it.
It's got a BMW M plate frame. No other badges, but an M plate frame.
Mm.
So you know it's not an M.
Well, on a similar note, I guess.
Honda Accord.
Well, no. We're talking cultural stereotypes, which is where we went with that last one. Rice Rocket. This one from Grant Bailey. Rice Rocket.
Mitsubishi Eclipse?
No.
I'm just going to think of tuner cars. That's where my head is at, audience. Tuner cars.
I know.
This is a 3000 GT.
Nope.
I'm going to guess one more. What would is a Honda Civic?
It's a Lexus LC 500.
Who would why?
Exactly, very elegant. I don't. Rice Rocket. Yeah.
All right.
His son, in this case, is not proud of him, right? No. It's burgundy over tan. Also, it's a convertible, which I used to think those were the best looking convertibles on the planet. But now seeing this from this angle with the top up, it gives me Nissan Murano cross cab vibes. And I think I can never unsee that. The Lexus LC 500 is going to be hideous to me from here on out.
What do you mean? The cross cab's gorgeous.
Your turn.
Up for you, Doug, from John A. Lil Pony.
Mustang V6.
Ooh, wrong Ford.
Lil Pony. Bronco Sport.
Yes, there it is.
It actually has to be the Sport.
Yeah.
Lil
Pony. I just thought that's a good time.
Okay, here's one I spotted on my way down to Naples for Cars on Fifth event. Good Mom.
Chrysler Town and Country.
No. I'm going to walk away while you guess everything, and you're not going to get it.
I'm not going to. Okay, Doug's left. I got to pick up the pen you threw. This is an Escalade.
Nope.
This is a Mustang.
Nope.
Okay. What is it?
It is a Porsche 993 Targa.
Oh.
Not just any, a 95, because it's got the basket handle. Or maybe an early 96.
Huh.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah. Respect.
Great Mom. Whew. Kids are at home.
Stephen B. sent this one in. BLQCATT. Black Cat.
Jaguar.
No.
A Puma?
No.
Mm.
I think you're going to be angry when I tell you what this is. You got one more guess?
Okay, tell me what it is.
It is a Cadillac CTS-V of some kind. Like the old like two-door one that's kind of not super attractive. Cadillac. Yeah.
I don't know. It looks aggressive like a cat. I don't know. Maybe it's a nickname that I don't know about. All right. Okay. We're going to just go right past that one. Another one spotted on the highway on my way to Naples. War Machine.
Dodge Charger.
No.
Lamborghini Aventador.
No.
Oh, is this some like Dodge Dually?
Nope. Porsche GT2 RS.
I still am not a fan of that plate. That's fine. Calm down.
It's got like 800 horsepower, so
I do
whatever.
Remember, we saw one.
And he does lots of rallies based on the stickers.
See, there it is. That's the type of guy. Spotted by me on the road the other day, DSNY LVR, Disney Lover.
Oh, that is a Cadillac Escalade or Chevy Tahoe Suburban.
It is not. But good
Sequoia.
That is a Subaru Outback, my friend.
Okay.
They love Disney.
And last one from Jake Dwinell. BD2DABN, Bad to Da Bone.
That's a Mustang. It's a black muscle car of some kind. No?
No. I mean, not on the right track, but...
Is it like a Di Tommaso Pantera?
No.
Okay.
No, it is a Corvette C5 with the chrome license plate. Chrome taillight cover things.
As a former C5 owner, I'm ashamed that I didn't guess that at first. Down to the chrome taillight strings. I'm ashamed. Last one for you, Doug, from David A. M. Kinda.
Is it like a BMW M Sport 240i?
It is, but it's like an X3 or something, like some crossover, but it's the M40i
situation.
I like
that plate. I give that guy props. That is way better than up badging.
Because you bought like an appearance package. I dig it's a good time.
It's M-ish.
Yeah. Yes.
Perfect. That guy wins tonight.
I want to, we can cut this if it doesn't play, but I saw one this week and I wanted to ask you guys.
Oh my gosh. Coming in.
Now it's possible that you've, because this is local and this thing stuck out like such a sore thumb to me. So it is possible that you've seen it before. But have you seen the vehicle with the license plate, Big Rig, B-I-G-G space R-I-G.
Got the double G's.
Big Rig.
Big Rig.
I've never seen that.
Really?
Really?
I just saw it on Sunday for the first time.
I feel like it's not what we're going to think it is.
It blew my mind.
Like, I want to guess it's like an Escalade, a Suburban, or an Excursion. Like
Cadillac,
an actual Big
DeVille,
Rig.
99 DeVille.
99 DeVille. What are you saying? Excursion?
Yeah, I'll go with Excursion.
It is a lifted smart car.
That's good. That's good.
Isn't that good?
Or that guy wins.
Yeah. Sorry, I'm kind of. You got run over by a smart car.
Yeah, that was it. That was it. I saw it in Solon. I saw
That's
it in
amazing.
Solon. It's perfect.
Switch Cars is the enthusiast dealership where we buy, sell, and consign only cars that we like ourselves. Check out our handpicked inventory online at switchcars.com and mention Switchcast for special pricing. You can find more information online at switchcars.com or come visit our showroom in beautiful Twinsburg, Ohio, where you can experience the Switch Cars difference.
Thank you for joining us for Switchcast with Doug Tabbitt and Tyler Sanders, produced by Ethan Huffnagel. Switchcast is an automotive entertainment and opinion show, and nothing we say should be taken very seriously. We do not give tax, investment, legal, emotional, or professional advice, and the only licenses we hold are driver's licenses. The opinions expressed on this show are exclusively held by the people pontificating at that moment and do not reflect the values of our producers or sponsors. Our theme music is provided by Emily and Ivory. You can stream their full album on Spotify or SoundCloud. If you like this show, you can stream it in its entirety on your favorite audio podcast platform. Check out switchcast.live for more info.